Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to another edition of NHL Wraparound. The conference finals are here. The final four are set. And we're going to be joined by NHL on TNT analyst Ed Olczyk to break it all down. But first, a word from Igrey.
From Howdy Hughes, from Béliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game worn jerseys. Go to mygray.com, MEIGRAY.com to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from Igrey.
Well, here we are again, Vic, and I'm serving you up a one-timer. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm going to tee one up here, and it's about the Vancouver Canucks, who I think learned a real hard lesson on closing a series out in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, they came into the regular season. The expectations weren't all that high for this team, but really from the get-go, they were an excellent club during the course of the regular season. They win the Pacific. They draw a Nashville team who, my belief is, they were probably fortunate to win that series. But as they moved on into round two against Edmonton, looked like they had the formula to defeat the Oilers and contain Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. But after taking a 3-2 series lead, they go into Edmonton, play a relatively flat game in game six. The series is tied, and then they're, of course, dispirited by learning that they would not have the services of Brock Besser for the rest of the playoff due to blood clots. And for 50 minutes on Monday night, they had nothing. I mean, it resembled game seven of the 2011 final that they played against Boston. And it was really a completely underwhelming effort. And of course, you know, in the last 8.5 minutes, they get goals by Garland and Hronek, and they almost tied the game. But this was a really tough lesson that you cannot play 8.5 minutes of solid hockey and expect to win a Stanley Cup playoff game, no less a game seven.
You got to wonder whether they whether their mindset was when Besser went down, their leading goal scorer in the playoffs, a blood clotting issue, been just such a big player for them all season. And they add that to the loss of Thatcher Demko. Now, I know that Chilos came in and played excellent for them. Actually, last night, on Monday night, rather, was his, I think, ninth playoff game after only playing 8 regular season games in his career, but was just outstanding. And I don't think anything can be blamed on him. But sometimes mentally, when a team knows that they got to face McDavid and Draisaitl and Hyman and all these stars, and now one of your stars is gone, plus your all-star goalie is gone, I don't know if that just seeped into them, because they did have a tremendous season. Their coach is probably going to win the Jack Adams Award for the job that he did, that being Rick Tocchet. And you just wonder what got into their psyche that made them, as you say, they didn't show up for 50 minutes in that game. And you can't win. You can't win a game one, let alone a game seven, when you only come to play for 10 minutes.
Well, this is likely going to be a building block for a team that's got a pretty bright future ahead of them. But at this time, we would like to welcome a brand new sponsor to the NHL Wraparound team, and a big welcome to Lee Elias and the Game 7 group. Game 7 are the two ultimate words in sports. Succeeding requires the best of teamwork. At the Game 7 group, transforming individuals into cohesive groups allows every team the potential to achieve extraordinary results. Game 7 group offers various services such as team building events, plus coaching and speaking engagements aimed at improving team dynamics, productivity, and overall performance. We all want to succeed in the big moment. Check out the Game 7 Group website at game7group.com/NHL wraparound to learn more. Right now, a special incentive offer awaits our podcast listeners. Take your team to the next step. The Game 7 Group will get you there.
Now it's my pleasure to welcome to NHL Wraparound someone who's very near and dear to me, a 1994 Stanley Cup champion. Eddie Olchuk also has been the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, also a famous Winnipeg Jet. And Eddie, I think mostly I think of you as a Chicago Blackhawk more than anything, because you've had so many years of playing there. You were drafted there. You were a great color commentator for them for so many years. And, I don't know how you see yourself, what uniform you see yourself in, but, you know, we all see ourselves as something. I wonder, do you see yourself more as a Blackhawk, a Jet, or a Ranger?
Yeah, well, first
or
off,
a Leaf. Sorry,
yeah, right, exactly. Too. Yeah. Well, Neil and Vic, it's nice to be with you, and I'm glad we can finally get on the same schedule, because I know we've been trying to get together here for a while, but it is great to be with you guys, and thanks for having me. You know, it's an interesting question. I don't think I've ever really been asked that, I guess, in the media ranks, Neil. So a hell of a question to come out of the starting gates with me. I think probably Chicago, just because I was a Chicago guy and grew up living and dying with the Blackhawks, and getting drafted in my hometown, you know, the first American-born native son ever to be drafted by his hometown team in the first round of the NHL entry draft, but way back in 1984. But, you know, look at, I laid my hat in some places where I really grew as a player. I grew as a person. You know, you mentioned Winnipeg. I spent almost 6 years in the Peg and loved every second of it. You know, I played in Pittsburgh, where I was a coach, a player, a broadcaster. I spent almost 10 years of my life in the Berg. You know, Toronto is really where I kind of, I don't think I arrived as a player, but I think the opportunity was there a little bit more. And I think I established myself in the National Hockey League. I did have a cup of coffee quickly with the LA Kings back in 96, 97. And then, of course, our time together with the Rangers, which, you know, still to this day, when I go back to New York City or do a Ranger game on TNT, there isn't a time that I don't go to that city and somebody doesn't yell heave ho or, you know, thanks for 94. I've been very, very lucky to play in, you know, some of the greatest cities we have in the world, let alone in a National Hockey League. So, but long-winded, I would say, you know, most people would probably associate me, and I would probably say, when it's all said and done with a lot of stops, I would say, you know, I lived and died with the Blackhawks, and I don't think that's going to change.
So, Vic, I got to tell you a little bit of trivia about Eddie and the Stanley Cup. His words, heave ho, that he did for the stretch with the guys, and that became sort of a calling card for the team. Yeah. That's actually on the Stanley Cup rings. So Eddie's signature is basically on everybody's ring, because it says heave ho on there.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than spelling OLCZYK. So we just say, yeah. We'll put heave ho. But yeah, I mean, you know, Vic, I mean, my role, obviously, that year, I mean, I had a very small role on that team. I was a role player, and I think I learned a lot about myself as a person and as a player, where, you know, I came from scoring 30-plus goals for 5 straight years in a National Hockey League, and then, you know, then I got traded to the Rangers, and look at that. I mean, if you really look at it, I mean, my career came to a screeching halt once I got to New York. I mean, that's just the reality of it individually. But I would never trade in the experience that I had with our guys and Neil and the trainers and our staff, that you work so hard to win the greatest trophy in the world and to have been a very small part of it. So, like, I had to find my role on our team. And I think I talk a lot about that on broadcasting now, is, you know, you have to do two things. You have to accept and you have to execute it. And, you know, everybody wants to be on a power play. Everybody wants to be out there at the end of the games. But there's only so much ice time to go. And when I became a role player, I had to absorb a different role more off the ice and become a leader, even though we had, you could argue, and I would argue, some of the greatest leaders in all of professional sports on our team. When you looked at, you know, Mark Messier and Adam Graves and Kevin Lowe and Brian Leetch. And, you know, I can go up and down Steve Larmer. I can go up and down our team. But I had to find a role, and it was pretty much, and I've said this publicly, is that, you know, I pretty much had two roles. One was to make the guys laugh, and two was to stretch the guys, in the morning before our practices and then on the ice. And I kind of came up with the heave-ho, where it was like anytime I had heard heave-ho, it was always about pulling in the same direction and let's do this together, right, Neil? So that was kind of the rallying phrase that we had. And if you listen closely on some of the unbelievable videos that were out after we won the Stanley Cup, you can hear the heave-ho, you know, when we're taking our celebratory picture with the Stanley Cup at the Garden against Vancouver. And, you know, it was three heave-hos, and that's the way we kind of did everything. That's kind of how we left everything. So I knew what my role was, and sure, did I want to play? 100%. Do I still wish I would have played 30 years later? Yeah, 100%. But I would never trade in that experience. And having brought the city of New York and Ranger fans their first Stanley Cup in 54 years. And I tell people this all the time now, so-called after the fact, but I'm like, really, at the end of the day, 54 years isn't that long. I'm a Cubs fan, and Cubs fans waited 108 years to bring a World Series back to Chicago. So I figured about 54. I mean, that's really nothing when you look at 108. But in all seriousness, yeah, no, you're right. All seriousness, that time was very challenging, I think, for me and my family, my wife in particular. But I look back now and when we had our 25-year celebration 5 years ago, which I'm thinking, where in the hell is 5 years gone? But it was something I'll never forget, and I'm so proud. I look at my ring often. I see the little miniature Stanley Cup I have in my office. Pictures that always remind me. And look, anytime I hear the Ranger name, I do a Ranger game. I see the sweater, or I see the emblem. It's hard not, right, Neil, to just, not think about our team, right? And I will say this, the last thing I'll say, and we can move on, is that it's been thrown around here where, how do you think your 94 team would do against the current Rangers, the 23-24 Rangers, and, politically correct and what have you. I mean, the world we're living in now, I know what some of our guys probably would have said maybe 5 or 10 years ago. But all I will say is that in case it was going to come up, I guess I'll get to the headliner now. I would say is that this Ranger team would, the 23-24 version, would be a competitive team against our team in 1994. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Eddie, I'll just say, then I'll let Vic start. You were such an important part of that team, and I mean that with all my heart. You know that. But there was a lot of important parts, and there was about 50 important parts, including Benny in the dressing room and all our trainers, and Glenn Healy, the backup goaltender, to all the Mike Hartman. We had to have every single one of those guys, or we wouldn't have won. If you took one of those guys out of that whole thing, we wouldn't have won the Stanley Cup. But the one thing that the Toronto Maple Leafs should do right now is hire you and me, because we can go in and break that curse for them. You coach, I'll manage, and we'll be all set.
You make the great point, though. We had, and I think that's what made it. I think that's what made it so satisfying and gratifying individually and collectively, is because of the guys that you did assemble on our team, right? Like, we had some incredible guys. Like, everybody had, a role, and everybody just really enjoyed one another. We had so much fun together, and we still, all these years later, we, you know, we still tell the same stories. And, you know, I, like I said, I learned so much from a lot of our guys that, I mean, it's helped me, you know, to this day, not only, you know, my hockey life, but just, you know, to have mentors and guys that I looked up to and get a chance to play with them. And, you know, you always, you think you know how hard it is to win. Like my rookie year in Chicago, my 84-85 season, we went to the conference finals against Edmonton. Now, if everybody remembers, I mean, the 84-85 Oilers were right in the middle of their, you know, their major dynasty, right? So, you know, unfortunately for us, I mean, we went up against the Oilers. We lost in six games in the conference final. And, you know, I never got close until we obviously got back to the Cup 10 years later. So to finish that thought is like, you don't realize how hard it is to win and what it takes. And who it needs to, you know, what it needs to take with who until you actually attain it. And you're right. I mean, our trainers, you know, our guys, the highs and lows, the expectations, the pressure that went on with being in New York and trying to, you know, get over that 54-year curse. So you're right. You made a great point. Like the guys, I mean, what I always, I mean, what I miss most about playing and coaching is are the people. Everybody behind the scenes, the coaches and the players and the staff. And we had just, you assembled an unbelievable team and, very thankful, like I said, to have been a very small part of it, but I wouldn't trade it in for anything because we ended up getting the ultimate. And, still to this day, I wonder where in the hell all this time has gone, but, it's nice to see the boys every once in a while and see them on TV and, just reminisce because, it was, I think, a great time for all of us, and we really enjoyed each other's company, both on and off the ice.
So 30 years later, we have Rangers back in the Final Four, trying to chase that dream down again. And they're going to go up against the Florida club that was at the finals last year. And those two teams have met only once before, and that was in 97. And Esa Tikkanen had two overtime goals en route to a five-game series win for the Rangers. So different time now. And, you know, the Rangers' path was against a Washington team that tried to keep it close but really didn't have much depth to compete. Carolina plays with a little bit more pace. The Panthers, deep in all positions. They take out Tampa in five, Boston in six. So as this series starts, I think, Eddie, I'm going to ask you, Panthers are going to be in the Rangers' face to a degree that they have not seen before. Is this going to be the biggest challenge for New York in this series?
Yes, I'll answer your question first, Vic, but I just want to get this out here. Full disclosure. Before the playoffs started, I was asked, you know, who's going to make the Cup final. And I went Dallas, Florida. I just thought going into the playoffs, I thought that those teams, it felt like to me is that you'd have to go through both of those teams in order to get to the Cup. So now you have Edmonton going up against Dallas, and obviously you got the Blue Shirts taking on Florida. So full disclosure on that. This is going to be one hell of a series. Like, I know Florida is a pretty good size favorite in this series, and we're talking about the gambling aspect of it. And the people in Vegas, they didn't build those hotels on, you know, not being so sure, right? So they're a strong favorite, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think they're that strong of a favorite. I think this is one of those series where it's a pick 'em. I would make Florida the favorite just because I think of their ability to be able to, you know, the way that they play and how they have played, and they are battle tested. But I think this series has got a chance to be a long one. The one thing that it'll be really interesting because look, if Florida has the ability to play at times a bully mentality, right? Like they're not afraid to play on the line and then sometimes, quite frankly, cross the line. And we saw that in that last series against the Boston Bruins when, you know, Bennett gave that that cheap shot to Brad Marchand and it wasn't called. And okay, things happen. And I really loved and admired the way that, you know, Brad Marchand handled that, by the way, after the fact. So I'll be interesting on the Matt Rempe factor in this series. Like, I know what I would do. And I'm not Peter Laviolette in his coaching staff. I know what I would do. And you're going to have to know how to combat that right off the bat and know that there's going to be a line drawn in the sand. Now, who's going to be drawing the line? I think we'll find out very, very early. But I think this series has a chance to go the distance. You have two unbelievable goaltenders. You got some world-class defensemen on either side, you know, obviously with, you know, with Fox and Lindgren on the one pair. But if you look over at Florida's, like, Gustav Forsling has really emerged as a an unbelievable shutdown defenseman. He reminds me a lot of Vic and Neil. He reminds me a lot of Nicholas Jalmerson, who played with the Chicago Blackhawks for a long, long time. He's not as physical, but he has a lot of the same attributes and body language when you look at shot blocking and stick positioning and being able to make good exits out of the zone. But, you know, Forsling's, you know, I mean, he's a hell of a player. And I'm sure he's going to see, you know, a lot of the, I would assume a lot of the Trocheck line. I would imagine that would be the matchup, but, you know, things will tell. But both power plays have, you know, the ability to be able to snap it around and move it around. And, you look at, does it come down to discipline, right? Does it come down to, you know, a team, you know, staying out of the penalty box and not playing with that fire on the other side? So I just think it's going to be a hell of a series, but it'll be interesting on the mindset of the Rangers is, you know, you also got Blake Wheeler, right? I mean, there's rumors about Wheeler being available, but Neil, you live this. I mean, you sat in those rooms in those meetings. It's like, got a good thing going here, you know, like we got a good thing. So, who's going to be that guy coming out? And do you want to put Wheeler in that spot? You know, do you put him in after a loss? Do you throw him right in here to start the series and see where he is? I mean, you're jumping in to this playoff round and you're trying to jump onto a moving freight train, right? And Blake Wheeler, look at, he's been an excellent player for a long time. I think it'll be a tough ask, but again, a veteran guy that's been around, he's been a captain in Winnipeg. So that to me will be interesting is how, look at health we know is, let's, it is what it is at this time of year, but I'll be interested to see how the Rangers handle knowing what probably is coming their way from the toughness side of the Florida Panthers. And, you know, you got some tough guys on the Rangers. I mean, you got Trouba on the back end at, will step up and wish somebody a birthday 6 months early. And you got Goudreau there. I mean, you know, you got some Cooley plays, you know, he plays a hard game, a physical game. Kreider has that ability to, you know, take a piece of somebody. But, you know, where is the Matt Rempe factor? And that to me will be something that I will be tuning into in game one and see how this all plays out. Because, you know, at some point in the series, it's going to get a little nasty and that's okay. But, you know, how do the Rangers handle that?
Eddie, two things that I want to bring up because you've covered almost everything I was going to bring up. But one is that the Rangers depended most nights on out goaltending the other team because Shesterkin is world class. And you get very few times that they played this season where the guy in the other net was just as good as Shesterkin. Goalie Bob has had a complete reincarnation this year and last year. I mean, he's playing like he did when he was in Columbus or when the Flyers left. Him go, which was one of their worst moves. That's one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to ask about, about the goaltending and how will that affect them? But then the other thing, I was at game five at the Garden and down close to the ice with some friends and the Rangers didn't play very well, as you know, but Brent Burns gave it to Zibanejad at some point during the game. And Zibanejad Mika just was gone. Like, you never saw him again. And Panarin in the playoffs, as I want your opinion on it, to me, you don't see him. And then, you know, sometimes he'll come up with a goal and you notice, oh, he was playing tonight. And if those two guys, if Florida shuts down those two guys through physical play or through whatever, and goalie Bob is the equal to Shesterkin, it's going to be tough. But I don't want to give you my opinion. I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think it's fair. Like, I mean, those two guys in particular, I mean, yeah, they got to arise to the occasion. And look, the Bread Man does have that ability. I mean, he does have the ability to take a game over, which we have seen. And, he finds a way. All he needs is that one chance, right? I mean, and that sometimes that ends up being the difference in the game. But I think that, with a team like Florida, it doesn't matter if it's just those two guys or anybody else. Like, you're going to anticipate it where you're going to have somebody in your grill and you're going to look for somebody that's going to, like I said, wish you happy birthday a couple of days early. And you got to be ready. You got to be able to fight through it. But then you also, too, is you have to be able to answer the bell. And those guys aren't going to be the ones that, answer the bell, so to speak. You're going to answer the bell by playing and trying to do what they do best. But you're going to need other guys to say, okay, well, you know what? Like, here's the thing. Like, if you're going to have some of their toughness go ahead and take liberties on somebody else, well, you know what? On your skilled players, well, then you know what? Then your tough guys or your role players need to take some liberties and go ahead and figure out which guys you go ahead and want to make sure that you're drawing a line in the sand with as well. So I think both those guys will show up. I think both those guys need to show up. And I think that if the Rangers are going to have any chance, those guys got to get on the score sheet. Now, just because you don't get on you can still play really well and not get on the score sheet because you're talking about the goaltending, of Sergei Bobrovsky, but you could still change the momentum of a game. You could change the momentum of a series if you are on the verge, and you need to be able to maybe play a different way if you like it trading chances or if you like the rush chances or whatever. You're going to have to try to find a way to grind out some goals against Florida, right? Like, you're going to have to cycle. You're going to have to play in the corners. You're going to have to get in people's way. And you know what? You're going to have to play inside the dots. There's no doubt about it. And look at, if I'm on the Florida side, it's like, look at every single time that A, B, and C are on the ice, you're taking a piece of them, you're giving them a whack. That's just playoff hockey. And how do you guys respond to that? So I think it's a great question. And I think it's something that, those two guys in particular are going to have to, they're going to have to answer the bell. And, can they be better than they were? Yeah, I mean, sure. But those two guys, all they need is one play, and especially on a power play, because I think a lot of the momentum that really good offensive players have, as you guys know, is that if you're connecting on the power play and you're generating chances, you're going to feel really good the next time you go on the ice and when you're playing 5-on-5. So, we know the Garden crowd. I mean, we know how that building can get going. For me, a lot of this is going to be adrenaline driven. And when you're a little gassed or you might be down or there might be some question marks, the blue shirt faithful will have that ability to snap you out of it and help you rise a little bit. I mean, think about the crowd when the Knicks were going through what they did in the last playoff run against Indy. Injuries are what they are. You got to overcome it. They didn't. They lost. But man, oh man, like, if the Garden was just absolutely, the roof was ready to blow off when you saw the effort that Brunson was given. And Jalen Brunson actually went to school about 5 miles from my house here. He actually went to school with my daughter at Stevenson High School, before he went to Villanova. And I had heard about him, in the neighborhood. It was like, this kid's got a chance, right? And obviously his time in Dallas and then eventually getting to the Knicks. But I just think that, the energy at this time of year, you just got to go play and the crowd is going to help you. But I think for any player, let alone the star players, is this is where you're going to be evaluated is can you get it done? Doesn't mean you're going to win. Like, you could, the Bread Man could have, he could have 3-6 in the series and they could still lose. Like, that's just that's just playoff hockey, but the big guys got to show up on both sides, and I would expect that to happen.
And I think there's going to be some counter also from Florida, certainly with, you know, the griminess of Sam Bennett and Matt Tkachuk, who had a tremendous playoff last year before he got hurt in the finals against Vegas. And then, you know, then there are the other pieces up front where Carter Verhaeghe's had a good playoff and Sam Reinhart cracked the 50-goal mark for the first time. And, oh, by the way, here's the Selke winner, Alex Barkov, who is probably the best 200-foot player in the league right now. So New York really has their hands full with the forwards. The defense unit is strong. I'm expecting that Adam Fox is going to see a lot of Bennett and Tkachuk during the course of this series. And there are some other agitators on the Florida Panthers as well. So, you know, this really has all the earmarks of a true heavyweight battle. You agree, Eddie?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, with, you know, without a doubt, you're right. I mean, as we talked about a little bit earlier, Vic, I mean, Florida does have that ability to play kind of any way you want. Like if they're down two or three, they can play a wide open game. You know, you mentioned Sasha Barkov. I mean, mentioned the other night on the broadcast on TNT, you know, with the finalist of, for the Selke Trophy, for the best defensive forward. I still can't believe that Sidney Crosby was not one of the finalists this year with the year that he had, you know, offensively and, you know, playing without the puck. But that's probably for another one of your shows. But for Florida, you know, look at, if you want to grind it out, they can play that type of game. You want to go ahead and have a street brawl. Well, you know what? They can do that too. They seem to be able to feed that. We had the Stanley Cup final on TNT last year. This year it's on ESPN. We alternate every year, but we did that series last year. And look at, they were banged up. You know, all that time off, I don't think did them any good. Yeah, I think they had 9 days off in between the conference final and the final, and guys were banged up. And obviously Matthew Tkachuk was really banged up, but they are the ultimate all-around team. They could play however the way that you want, and it'll be really interesting. And look, I think there's a lot of pressure on both teams, but there's a lot of pressure on Paul Maurice too. I mean, Mo has been around a long time, and, you know, they got to the final last year, and, you know, obviously they came up short, but, you know, they did a hell of a job this year, and the expectations are on, and, you know, I look at, like, the, you know, we, like, again, we don't know. I mean, Neil, we know, but, like, you know, you don't know how people are going to react and how they're going to handle certain situations. And, you know, they're defining plays in playoffs. And, you know, I remember that hit that Bennett put on Slavin last year in the playoffs, right? I mean, that was kind of a defining hit, very similar to the Jamie Benn hit on Devon Taves in the last series with Colorado and Dallas, almost the same area of the ice as well, which is kind of, it should be a warning sign for young hockey players of understanding, like, just make sure you know where you are on the ice when you're moving in behind the net. And sometimes you get shielded by the goaltender and all of a sudden you got somebody coming down trying to knock you into the fourth or fifth row. So I agree with you, Vic. I mean, Florida can play, and the Rangers are going to have their hands full for sure. Yeah, and at times in that Carolina series, 5-on-5, Carolina had the Rangers, you know, I don't want to say they were on the ropes, but they, you know, they were doing a lot more defending, that being the Rangers, than they were offensively. But the guy in goal was pretty good, and then they became very opportunistic. And Carolina's, you know, MO here the last little while is, you know, just can't seem to get it done. And when you need some offense, they don't seem to have it at the right time. And, you know, I would imagine that team's probably going to change quite a bit with a lot of the free agents that they have coming in Carolina. But long-winded, yes, Florida can play any way you want. And the Rangers better be ready to either dictate the terms the way they want to play or be ready to go ahead and roll up their sleeves and put the hard hats on and be prepared for a hell of a series.
Last one quickly for me for this segment. How much does Florida's trip to the final last year play into this, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it has to. I mean, sure, Neil would agree. You know, the experience that you gain and you get, and you're, you're a little disappointed, and quite frankly, you're probably still stung and pissed off that it went the way it did. But you know, you're right. I mean, they've got some guys. I mean, the majority of their team is back, and you know, look at it. Do I think they're a better team now than they were last year? Yeah, I do. I do believe that, and it looks like they're healthier. I mean, we don't know, but yeah, I think that experience certainly bodes well. But from the Rangers' point of view, it's like, yeah, okay, well, you went to the final and you lost, so nobody, you know, nobody remembers who lost. They just remember it was the Vegas Golden Knights who, you know, who won their first Stanley Cup in only 6 years of existence.
Eddie, stay with us because we're going to take a look at the Western Conference Final between Dallas and Edmonton. But first, a word from Migray.
Time now for a quick shout out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by Migray, your source for game-worn jerseys. Head to Migray.com to get your collection started today. Get real. Get it from Migray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at MyGray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code WRAP10.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. The Dallas Stars and Edmonton Oilers will be meeting for the 9th time in their playoff history. Dallas has won 6 out of 8, and they did win the season series against the Oilers this year. Eddie, coming into this series, and based on what we have seen through the first two rounds, what have you learned about the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers thus far?
Wow. First off, I will be on the call of that series with Kenny Albert and Brian Boucher and Jackie Redmond. We will be on that series for TNT. So looking forward to it. I spent a lot of time in the Western Conference during the playoffs, Vic. So I think I've done 5, maybe 6 of Dallas's games so far in these playoffs. I did 1 Edmonton, and that was game 5 where they were not very good in the last series against Vancouver. And Vancouver, you know, I think they had more shots in one period than they did, I think, in 2 of the games that they had played prior. They had 18 shots, I think, in period 2 of game 5. But let's start off with Dallas. I think the interesting dynamic has been is they pretty much only played with 5 defensemen all playoff long. So I think this break is obviously going to do them a world of good. It sounded like Yanni Hakanpää was getting closer. Petrovic played really well coming into that game 6 against Colorado, where I think he played like 17, 18 minutes, where Nils Lundqvist was only averaging, you know, 450 or whatever, 455 of ice time. So I thought, especially with round 1 of Vegas-Dallas going 7 games, I thought, wow, you know, like, it's probably going to take its toll somewhere along the line. Now they got the break, the extra break, which I think will bode them very, very well. So that to me, I thought was really interesting, is that they pretty much only played, you know, with 5 defensemen. Their depth at forward, you know, the emergence of Logan Stankoven and Wyatt Johnston has really been, I don't want to say a blessing in disguise, because I think they both had, the team had high hopes for them. But this is a deep team. You talk about a team like Florida. I think Dallas can play that same way. You want to play a draw the line in the sand type of game, they can play that game too. I mentioned earlier the big hit. I thought the series changed when Jamie Benn ran over Devon Taves in that game 2. And again, the series was 1-0 Colorado, let's remember. And Dallas had a 3-0 lead and a 4-0 lead in the first 2 games of that series. So, and everybody had Colorado, I think. I mean, I should say a lot of people thought Colorado was going to be the team to beat in the Western Conference. Think about the gauntlet so far that Dallas has had to run here. They had to take out Vegas, defending Stanley Cup champions, you know, the wild card team. Oh, welcome to the playoffs. 1-8 matchup, and we lose a team that, you know, I think a lot of people felt if they beat Dallas, I think a lot of people thought they could go to the Cup final. And then they take on Colorado, who was a lot of people's pick to get there as well. So, but their skill level, their power play when they really get it going, Jake Ottinger, I've always liked. I mean, I think he's been really good, but then he's had a couple of games where he's given up some bad goals. There's no other way to say it. And if he can just be above average, you know, Dallas is the team to beat in this matchup without question. So, and what happened in game six is Colorado had all the momentum. And Roope Hintz, I mean, he's a big X factor here. He did not play the last couple of games in that series. So it sounded like that maybe if there was a seven that there could be. But now with all this time, you know, hopefully he will be back, because then their lines really become impactful one through four. Like the line of Smith, Steele, and Dodonov, like they scored the game-winning goal in round one in game seven. And then that line really had a couple of good games. I mean, Cogliano has been, I mean, he's been flat out dynamite in this series. Steele has killed penalties. He's created some chances. So their fourth line has been really an important part. But what I was getting at in game six, and this is where I go to Peter DeBoer, who I think, you know, and Neil, you could speak to this better than anybody. I mean, and you know, and I did it for a couple of years when I was coaching in Pittsburgh. I think one of the majority of the game management positions for a head coach, and the recognition of knowing who's going in a game and who isn't. Now, everybody's bungee cord is a different length, right? Like we know that the stars are going to get their, you know, they're going to get more ice time than the role players. But what happened in game six was, and we had talked about this on the broadcast, I was with Johnny Forslin and Shane Knighty on that call on TNT, is I thought that Peter DeBoer needed to change the look of his team up front, right? And to start the third period, he changed the lines and he got a huge goal from Jamie Benn he was playing on a different line. So what I'm getting at is that he has the ability, Peter DeBoer, to see and know what's going on and to be able to line up guys and to be able to get them in those situations where it's going to be advantageous, A, for the players, and B, most importantly, for, you know, the team. Because if you're going stale and you can move guys around and know when to push a button and when not, it's going to give you an edge. And I think that he deserves a primary assist in that win in game six. So I love their team. I think they have incredible depth. They can play any way you want. And really nothing has surprised me, Vic, because I saw them quite often before the playoffs started. And they were pretty damn impressive. And like I said, you take out Vegas and you take out Colorado in back-to-back rounds, people should know that you are a legit team and you're a dangerous team. And we'll see how it all plays out in this next round against Edmonton.
Eddie, I want to play Captain Obvious for a second and talk about Edmonton's goaltending. I say, you know, obviously their Achilles heel, it's been there all year and it's there again in the playoffs. And, you know, I think it's easy to say that Ottinger is going to have to play the way he plays, but what does Edmonton do? I mean, they and what have they done that you've seen so far in the playoffs to make up for the you don't know what to expect out of their goaltending. You don't know what to expect out of Skinner, and then all of a sudden they throw Pickard in net, and you know, that obviously is their Achilles heel.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot there, Neil, and I think it's a fair question. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that Skinner obviously starts this series, but I think they'll go to Cal Pickard if they have to. I mean, you know, he came in and played two really good games, and that's what you need, right? Like, you know, you talked about our team in 94, right? Like, you never know when your number is going to get called, and you got to be ready, whether it's backup goaltender or defenseman or a forward. So I think for Edmonton, like, they have not seen anybody like Dallas to this point in the playoffs. I mean, they really haven't. And I think what they've done very well, Neil, to answer the heart of your question, is that under Chris Knobloch, is they've really defended. They've learned to play defense really, really well. And the big boys are not worried about cheating on the side of offense or erring on the side of offense. Is that There are shifts where Drysdale and McDavid, and that's who we're talking about because those guys drive the machine. Is that when those guys are out there, as the opportunity presents itself, yeah, they're going. We know that. But there are some shifts where they go out there and they have to defend, or they just have to make sure that they're giving good low support in their own zone and move the puck out and get the puck in deep and get off the ice. I mean, that's, you know, like when you go back to that Vancouver series, there was a stretch of games there where McDavid and Draisaitl, I want to say it was like 2-3-4, where they, you know, they play like 29, 28, 24. In that game five, I think they hit a wall. Like, I think they were absolutely, they were out of gas in that game. I don't think there's any doubt about that in game five in Edmonton. At least McDavid looked more so than Draisaitl did. In my opinion, I did the game. I was in the building. But I think for Edmonton is that they've learned how to play defense, and they're very comfortable now at playing 2-1 games, 3-2 games. And they're well, but you know, I don't think they're giving up those, instead of giving up maybe 18 quality chances, Neil, a game, they're only giving up maybe 10 or 11. Vancouver, look at, they struggled in this series to generate a lot of offense. I mean, game five was their best game, and Edmonton was under siege without question. But Edmonton's going to have to face a team where it's going to be a really quick team. Like, this is going to be the quickest team and the deepest team and the most skilled team that they played so far. All due respect to LA and all due respect to Vancouver, this is going to be a great challenge. Now, you're going to need your goalie to win you a period, to win you a game. Can Stuart Skinner do that? He's proven that he's had some really good games, and, you know, but the jury's out. There's no doubt that that's their Achilles heel. Can Dallas put the pressure on him? And, oh, by the way, you're going to have to handle Heiskanen and Harley, right? Like, you're going to have to handle the 1-2 punch offensively with the Dallas Stars. So that's another element to their offense that makes them very, very difficult. And we're not even talking about the specialty teams, right? So I think I saw a stat, and I'm not a real numbers guy, but I think I did see this correctly, is that the team, at least to this point, now maybe, the numbers will tell you, well, at some point, the team that doesn't win the specialty teams battle is going to lose the series. My understanding is, I think the number is somewhere in that 12, I think it's 12-0. The teams that have won the specialty teams battle so far in the playoffs are perfect. So both these teams have unbelievable power plays. The penalty killing for Edmonton is really improved, but I don't think Edmonton has seen a power play like Dallas, because when they get it going, it's a lot like Edmonton's. I'm not saying, you know, it's 48%-ish like Edmonton has the ability to do, but it probably could be in that 30% tile. And the last thing I'll say about the power play, and I said this on the air one night when Edmonton's power play during the season was like on a run of, they were like 54% over five or six games. I said, you know what? If I was coaching, and I think it might have been St. Louis might have been in there, and I said, you know what I would do? If I was the head coach, I would call the referee over, and, you know, the old days for us, it would be, you know, Andy Van Helleman or Bill McCreary, Neil and Vic were showing our stripes here, you know, and I'd call him over and go, here's the deal. Why don't you just go put the goal up on the board, and we'll save the 2 minutes. It will save the 2 minutes and try to play more 5-on-5, because that power play is just absolutely lethal. And Evan Bouchard, since he stopped deferring over the course of the last year and thinking that he shouldn't shoot the puck, well, we've seen what he's done, because he could shoot the puck as well as anybody. Duncan Keith, the legendary Duncan Keith, and people may forget this, the future Hall of Famer, he spent a year in Edmonton. And he was Evan Bouchard's partner. And I remember Dunk grabbing me when I was in Edmonton doing a game. And he said, you know, he said, Edzo, you know what? He said, I don't think there's a guy in the league that shoots the puck harder than this guy. He said, this guy's unbelievable. He just needs to learn. He needs to just, you know, work on his defensive game a little bit. And this guy's going to be a star. And he has turned into a star very quickly. Now, in fairness, he was paired with Duncan Keith for 1 year. And then Kenny Holland goes, well, you know, Duncan Keith's retiring, so we're going to go get Matthias Ekholm, and now we're going to put him with Ekholm. So He's had two unbelievable mentors and two unbelievable teachers there and partners, obviously. But since he has stopped deferring, at least from what I see, since he stopped deferring on the power play, their power play has gone from here, obviously, with McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, honestly, like, those guys could tell you, I mean, I know they wouldn't say this, but those guys have the ability to go, you know what, you guys just go stand over here. It's going to be like an isolation play, right, where you're just going to go, it's going to be me and Draisaitl against everybody else, and if we need you, you guys can jump in here, right? But since Bouchard has started shooting the puck, I believe their power play has gone to another level, but it'll be a great challenge in this series between Dallas and Edmonton.
Well, Eddie, I could go on with you all day long, and I know Vic could, and I love listening to you. I do. I love hearing what you have to say. You're so good at this now after these years. It's tough when I see you on TV. I go back to, you know, right away our days together, and then when I listen to you sometimes now, I'm like, holy crap, this guy is, he's really good.
But it's been, thanks. Yeah.
It's been a lot of years.
It's been a long time. Yeah, been a lot of growing pains. And I sometimes, real quick, because my youngest son, Nick, who we work together in Seattle on the local broadcast for the Seattle Kraken, and he's an aspiring broadcaster and, you know, going over old clips of me and Vic back in our day when we worked together at ESPN, and I was still playing and I was moonlighting as a broadcaster when I wasn't in the playoffs. Is, you know, when you're a young broadcaster, I mean, you're so excited, you got so much to say, and you know, you're so excited about the Dallas series and the Edmonton series, and, you know, don't forget the games are every other day this series, right? Like, you know, and they might get Roope Hintz back and they might get Yanni Hakanpää. It's just like, when I watch old videos, I'm like, holy cow, take a breath, would you? Like, you're so excited about everything. So now it's almost like, okay, you just take it in, you breathe a little bit, and you just, you know, like, you got a little bit more time than you have, and you just look at, you need repetition. Look at, whether it's being a manager, whether it's being a player or a coach or a broadcaster, it's like, the only way to get it is to get your reps. And the last thing I will say is, I think the greatest thing that helped me over my broadcasting career was that I started on radio. And I was an analyst on NHL radio way back when. And what radio forces you to do, right, is to be descriptive. You have to paint a picture for the people that obviously can't see what the hell is going on. So I think starting in radio for me was the greatest thing that ever happened. And, you know, some of my friends still tell me I have a face for radio. And Neil, you can relate to that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we, you know, you just, you know, but in all seriousness, like, I thought getting into radio for me, I never knew this, but I look back and I always tell young broadcasters now, if you get a chance to get into radio, and I know everybody wants to be on TV and social media and whatever, but if you can get into radio, it will help you long term as far as being a broadcaster. And I was very thankful to be able to, you know, get my start in radio and then eventually at ESPN. And all these years later, I've got a few games under my belt. Not like the great Doc Emrick, but I'm gaining on Doc, that's for sure.
Well, Eddie, thanks. Thanks for doing this. I'd love to spend another show with you doing other things other than the playoffs. But if we can ever get you back sometime, I know Vic and I would be so thankful and are so thankful that you did this. So
anytime. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Just want to remind you that our website has launched, www.nhlwraparound.com. We've got audio and video of all of our episodes, show notes, the newsletter, bio info. And if you're a New York Ranger fan and you want to weigh in on your experience on what 1994 meant to you, we're accepting 30-second video clips to include in our series, 1990 forever. So Neil, as we got Eddie Olczyk's predictions on the conference finals, and we know that Miyu and Bucci had done the first two rounds. The second round, you got 2 out of 4, winning with Florida and Edmonton. Bucci got 3 out of 4, including the New York Rangers. And the blind squirrel here, yours truly, picked all 4 winners in the second round. Yeah, how about that? So who do you like to make the Stanley Cup final?
Well, wait. First of all, Vic, tell us, where do we stand in the total standings now, including the first and second round?
Okay. So you and Bucci picked 8 out of 12 correctly. I've picked 9 out of 12 correctly. So,
oh my God.
That's it. So I'm setting the pace heading into the conference finals. What do you have?
I got exactly what Eddie Olczyk said. I got Florida over the Rangers, probably 7. And I've got Dallas beating Edmonton in less games than that. I'd say 5.
All right. And from this side, I've got the Rangers in 6, and I've got Dallas in 6. But Bucci has weighed in from the Vancouver airport where he played game seven of the series between the Oilers and the Canucks. And let's hear what he has to say.
Okay, boys, John Butchergrass reporting from Vancouver Airport. Just called Game 7 last night. Edmonton moves on. They beat the Vancouver Canucks. So we're down to 2 series. We're down to 4 teams. Let's start in the West. I'd love to see Connor McDavid make it, get to the final, be on the big stage for all to see, and ultimately play the Rangers in New York City. I think that would be great for the sport, great for hockey, great for McDavid. But I just don't think it's going to happen. In the West, I think Dallas is too deep. We know Edmonton's bottom 6 just doesn't quite produce. Certainly if they get a heroic effort up top and they get amazing goaltending, they could pull off the upset, but I think that's too tall of a task. Again, I'd like to see it, but I think it's going to be Dallas in 6. And in the East, again, the Rangers, you know, the big anniversary of 1994, maybe that's providing some magic, or maybe it's a mirage. We don't know. I know the Panthers are loaded. They just kind of stack up some offense, you know, Barkov and Kachuk and then Reinhardt. You forget about Verhaeghe, and, you know, I just think it's a bit too much. It's tight. It's close. It's closer in the East than it is in the West, I think. But I'll take Panthers. So we got a Panther star final for the Stanley Cup. Thanks for remembering, boys.
And we thank John Butchergrass for going above and beyond for his predictions in the conference finals. This is the Human Side of the Story being brought to you by UBS Financial Services Incorporated. And Neil, a very special guest and a special guy that we had on today with Eddie Olczyk.
A very special human being. And I want to talk about just a little capsule of Eddie's life growing up in the Chicago area, being the first American Chicago native to be drafted by his beloved Chicago Blackhawks in the entry draft, later being traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs and having a really good stint with the Toronto Maple Leafs. After that, going to the Winnipeg Jets, where he had also an illustrious career with the Winnipeg Jets. And then traded to the New York Rangers because of yours truly. And played well for us in the New York Rangers, but during the 93-94 season, never really got a chance to do what Eddie could do. It was a packed team, but Eddie took that on and said, you know what, I've been a star my whole career, and now I've got to find a way to contribute. He said that himself. I admire this guy so much for the human side of Eddie Olczyk, the guy that says, I'm not going to let this discourage me. I'm going to be the best I can be where they let me play, and I'm going to contribute to this team. And he did contribute to that team. And as I said, his heave-ho is the signature on the side of the Stanley Cup ring. It was a while later that Eddie got to become the color commentator for a long time for his beloved Blackhawks. He was so well known for the Blackhawks. And during that time of being a color commentator and doing national games as well, as you well know, Vic, Eddie was diagnosed with colon cancer. Eddie fought that just like he fought through his NHL career. Never let it get to him that he would quit. Had a lot of help from his wife. He talks about that publicly. However, he's today a cancer survivor and is a great emblematic figure in the fight against colon cancer and to be checked so that you don't suddenly get diagnosed with colon cancer, go for a colonoscopy. I've heard many of his public service announcements. And today he's still doing that great job that he's always done on TNT and working with Brian Boucher, who's another one of our favorites. And so I salute Eddie Olczyk as the human being that he is. Don't forget, he was also the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins for a while. So he's pretty well done everything you could do. And I think I just hope he knows what a great human being and what a contributor he is to all of humanity.
He certainly is. And let's not forget, he knows his horses pretty well as well. So that will wrap up our show for today. With special thanks to Migray, UBS, and our newest sponsor, the Game 7 Group. Thanks to our listeners. Send questions or comments to nhlwraparound@gmail.com. And don't forget, our website is up and running, nhlwraparound.com. We will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.